If you're looking out the window and thinking that enough is enough with the snow, you are not the only person thinking that. Dealing with snow and cold temperatures when it feels like it ought to be spring. Last year at this time, it was 80 degrees in southern Wisconsin. Makes it much more likely that we might overdo things once we can get outside. Larry Mueller here, physical therapist Bill Boyce and Alton Lurie. Time Brody are here to share some great advice with us. Bill's an associate professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to see you again, Bill.
Great to be here. I enjoyed skiing over here today.
Yeah, hold on a second there. Now I've got you.
Great to be here. And I said I enjoyed skiing over here this morning.
Yeah, heavy snowfall in southern Wisconsin right now. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine Spine Center. Lori, always a pleasure.
It's good to be here. I'm glad I made it here in the snow. I mean, who'd have thought? How many days before the official first day of spring that I'd be sliding here on ice and snow?
Yeah, so, I took a little tumble on the way over.
Yeah, and I saw somebody running. I thought, I wanted to hand my card out the window as I went by him here. Give me a call later.
Well, I had two people fall in front of me walking over here this morning, and both I was able to help kind of ease down to the ground. I kind of did my good Samaritan duties today, but it was slick.
Well, it's that tricky thing where I think there was a little bit of wet and rain, and it made a little bit of slush on the ground, and it got hard and then snowed on top of it. So it's a lot slicker than people had anticipated, I think.
So we usually don't see as often the injuries that come from a fall in the ice near the end of March.
This time of the year, that's right.
Yeah. Who'd have thought we'd still be talking about shoveling and shoveling injuries and falling on the ice
and
the end of March?
Well, the winter enthusiasts have to be thrilled.
Yeah, they must be happy. It's a nice snowfall, so get out for that, you know, last cross-country ski or that last snowshoe, or get your yak tracks out on the bottom of your shoes for another day, because this isn't like those snows last week where they hit the ground and melt. This is not melting.
No, it's not. Well, what kind of injuries we normally see at this time? You know, what are we going to see in 2 weeks? Yeah, I'm thinking things are going to be better in 2 weeks.
I hope they are. Well, we're going to see people, when the sun does return, it's that spring sun that feels warm. And so people get that spirit of, oh, man, I feel like it's spring now. And they're going to go out and they're going to start running. They may start clearing stuff out of their garden, depending upon if it still has snow cover or not. So they might be pulling stuff out. The ground might be partially frozen. And so they might be tugging at stuff that still has its roots down in some frozen ground. So you've got to be careful.
Yeah, shoulder injuries, back injuries, neck injuries. And, you know, our message has been consistent when you start something, activity like that, is don't spend 3 hours doing one thing, you know, first day or two out there. Maybe spend a half an hour doing one task, then switch to another task. You can always come back to the initial task again. And so it's kind of cross-training in the yard, and that can help with some of the overuse. And Lori's right. When you're yanking on something that you're expecting to pull out of the ground, I mean, that's when people hurt shoulders and backs. And so just be prepared. And wearing a good pair of gloves, important, protect those hands as well.
Yeah, all good things to think about. We've got Vicki on the line from Merrill. By the way, if you'd like to join in, have a question or comment, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Vicki is on the phone, though, so let's go to Vic. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you, Larry, for having this show. My question revolves around my thumb. About a week ago, I was walking my dogs, and I used one of those retractable leashes. Now, at the same time, I had shoveled quite a bit because we had two snowfalls right on top of each other, and then the retractable leash thing. And after this one particular day, I noticed my thumb and that whole thumb joint was getting sore. Well, I knew immediately I had to back off, which I did, but it continued to get worse. It wasn't in constant pain. It was only a pain when I moved it. And at first it seemed like it was more the joint right at the bottom, the L of your hand, but then the trouble came to that middle joint, beneath your thumbnail, that that joint there, and to the point where it actually was snapping in and out of, it felt like it was snapping, you know, like it was a rubber band and it was going in and out.
Yeah.
Okay, I iced it down for several days, and then I also went and bought a thumb splint thing that would immobilize my thumb because I felt like it was more comfortable when I wasn't doing anything. I couldn't pinch anymore with it. I couldn't do anything, but there was no throbbing pain. My question is, it's been over a month now. Do I need to see a specialist, or is time going to heal this on its own? I'm concerned because there's still swelling around, especially that first joint.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an easy question to answer. You need to see somebody.
Okay.
Your thumb is so important for hand function,
yes,
as you've noticed. Okay. That's what distinguishes us from other mammals, right? Our opposable thumbs. And especially if it's your dominant hand, you use it for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you know, at first I thought maybe you just had a flare of some arthritis, but you're snapping. You could have injured some ligaments, which you really need to stabilize your thumb and have it function effectively. So the splint was the right thing to do. Continue to use that and make an appointment to see someone.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Watching the basketball game yesterday with the UW against Ohio State, and Jared Berggrund re-injured his thumb
yes.
during the game.
He was hurting for a while.
Yeah, he was in a fair amount of pain. Carol in Gutenberg, Iowa. Hello, thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning. Thanks a lot. I don't like to be a whiner, and I'm very physically active. In fact, I cross-country ski a lot, too. I have both plantar fasciitis and a foot neuropathy, and the neuropathy makes my feet really hot. Does that sound familiar?
Well, people with neuropathy have all different kinds of neurologic symptoms. Some have numbness, some have tingling, some have good sensation, but they can't tell where their feet are, you know, when they're moving in space. So everyone's a little bit different, but burning is consistently a neurologic symptom, so yes.
Okay, so I want to heal it, but I have a lot of work to do this spring on, you know, heavy work. I'm on my feet a lot with my job, so what can I do to heal this besides going on? I've been to a neurologist who tells me gabapentin.
Well, your plantar fasciitis and your neuropathy are two separate issues with two different treatments. So the neurologist and the gabapentin, you know, that's really the right path for the neuropathy.
Okay.
You know, in terms of physical therapy, we treat people who have peripheral neuropathy. We can't make your neuropathy go away. We can help you with things that improve the function of, for example, your feet that have neuropathy. But we're not going to make your neuropathy go away. Really, the medication is what does that. In terms of the plantar fasciitis, you know, we recommend things like night splints, looking at your footwear. Have you seen someone for your plantar fasciitis?
Been that whole route. I wear, foot.
The night splints and.
Well, the night splints. I can't do that because I'm a claustrophobe.
Okay.
So I've had a boot. I bought a boot.
Okay.
For my foot, but I just can't do that. It's just more than I can, you know, I have it on and
okay.
I have to kick it off.
Okay.
So I guess if you're telling me this is the route, but I'm saying no.
Okay. Well, have you been to a physical therapist to treat your
I have.
Okay.
I use ice a lot.
Okay. The ice, the tennis ball, the frozen cup, the frozen water bottle rolling under your foot.
Correct.
The plantar fascia specific stretch.
Yes.
The calf stretching.
Yeah.
The footwear.
Right.
The orthotics. Yep.
Carol, you could take these calls for us.
Yes,
it sounds
exactly.
Like.
Come have a seat in the studio.
Yeah. Carol, you know, with the night splint, I understand it doesn't work for people, and it won't have as much of an effect. But, you know, during the day, if you're off your feet for more than 30 minutes or maybe even an hour, you can put the night splint on during the day. So it just keeps it under some degree of stretch so that when you get up and start walking again, it's not quite so sore or painful. But it'll give it a nice sustained stretch for whatever time you are actually down. So it won't help to the same degree, but it may help a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Carol. Thank you for calling. Diane in West Bend, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. I developed tendonitis in my dominant elbow, which is the right one, in about December, and just tried to limit activity, but it still is aching severely, and am in occupational therapy now, where I have stretches, massage, ultrasound, and wear a Dex patch and use a night splint on my wrist. And if it flares up, I'm icing it. And am improving somewhat, but I'm fearing how long this will take to really heal, and if I just need to really take it easy for a long time and not use this so it heals and continue with exercises then and let pain be my guide.
Are you doing any strengthening? You mentioned a bunch of different things you're doing, including the ultrasound, the Dex patch, the stretching. Are you doing any strengthening?
I just started with using a sponge is the where I can squeeze that.
Okay.
No weight at this point.
Okay. Well, you know, at some point, and again, not knowing your case or being able to examine you to decide when is the right time to start strengthening, that will be an important part of your program. So it sounds like right now they're focused on getting some of the inflammation and irritation down. And then it would be the time to start some strengthening exercises. And for this kind of tendinopathy at the elbow, the eccentric or negative muscle contractions, the lowering kind rather than the lifting kind, are typically more successful than the lifting or shortening kinds of contractions. So I would hope that your therapist progresses you on to those. You could see somebody who specializes in sports and orthopedics and those related injuries because they're used to treating people with this kind of tendinopathy as well.
Okay. I appreciate your insight on that.
You bet.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our physical therapist, with us today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guests, physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. We had a listener, Carol in Cambridge, just going back to a comment about plantar fasciitis. She found that taping was the key to healing her plantar fasciitis. Would you guys care to comment on that?
Sure. When my plantar fasciitis is bad, I tape my foot, and that's what I use to help get myself better. So that is something that can be done, and a physical therapist could instruct Carol. Mm-hmm. Carol in that technique if she was open to having her foot taped. I'm not sure if that would bother her with her neuropathy or not to have the tape on her foot, but she could try it. Right. I have a technique that I use that takes one piece of duct tape. It's probably slightly unconventional, but it works really well, and it's the right price.
Yes, yes.
Well, we had a 53-year-old listener with a bad shoulder fracture and shoulder replacement that didn't go well. He's going back for a new replacement in October, so it weighs off. Anything he can do for conditioning before that time to increase the success of his surgery?
Yeah, hopefully the second time will be a charm for him. Well, he's asking about conditioning, if I'm thinking more aerobic activity. Anything that's probably not jarring, mm-hmm. which would bother the shoulder, but biking, walking. He may need to have his arms supported If he's working on a little more endurance, if he's talking about strengthening or, around that shoulder specifically, and I'm assuming he's seen a physical therapist after the first surgery, but if movement is very limited, we can give people strengthening exercises that are isometric in nature, where they're working the muscles without movement.
Sure.
Maybe doing some gentle stretching of some of the soft tissues around the joint may help, you know, prepare that area for the surgery. And stretching for the mid-back and upper back, again, which he can be easily taught, helps the shoulder indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that he should be doing anyways, it sounds like, with his history. But conditioning shouldn't be a problem as long as the shoulder's not painful as he's doing it. And I would think things that are not jarring his body, like running, I would think that shoulder would tolerate pretty well.
Tim in Heartland has a question for you. Hi, Tim. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. I have a question. I had a total left knee replacement about 8 weeks ago, and I wish that people would be more honest with you. The doctors in the hospital say, oh, about 6 to 8 weeks, everything's fine. Well, it's not fine, and I think it takes a lot longer. And I was just wondering, and the doctors are going to say, well, everybody's different, but there has to be somewhat of a normal. I've got my straightening to about 10% without being pushed down, and I can bend now about 110, 112. And I'm just wondering if you guys have some general rules of thumb besides I should be more patient.
Well, you're right on with 6 to 8 weeks. Boy, that's a really fast recovery from a knee replacement. And much of it depends upon the status of your knee and your overall health and fitness prior to your surgery. So the better shape you're in, the better shape your knee is in, the faster your recovery will typically be. So people who are exercising, maintaining their strength, their cardiovascular, their mobility, all that prior to surgery will recover faster. And then, you know, then it goes out from there. It's a bell-shaped curve like most things, and you are on the curve somewhere. You know, I'd say if at 8 weeks you're from, are you short 10 degrees from full extension? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're to 110 degrees of flexion or so, you know, you're in pretty good shape. Get that knee straight, though. Get it straight, and if you can get up to 120, 125 degrees of flexion, you'll be happier.
And is the stiffness pretty common?
Yes, stiffness is very common, and you've just got to keep working. You just got to keep working it. Got to keep lubricating it. That, you know, the knee gets its lubrication from movement. So continuing to move it is going to be helpful, and training those tissues that they need to move, and they need to move on a regular basis, and they'll respond. But it does take a long time.
Tim,
are you talking nine months?
For many people, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, before it starts, before it reaches its peak recovery, you're looking at 6 to 12 months would be a general rule. It's a major surgery, and a lot of people's knees are in pretty tough shape going into that surgery. Tim, are you still working with a physical therapist?
Yes, I am.
Good.
Okay, good. Keep working with them, and they'll help progress your program and get that range of motion back.
Yeah.
What about water? I've been going into water. Does that sound pretty good, too?
Yeah, water's perfect. It's a great place to be.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thank you for calling, and good luck. 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, some people do feel remarkably better fast.
Well, but, you hear, professional athletes or whatever recovering very quickly. And,
well, it depends upon how you define recovery. You know, are you going to be home and walking around and, you know, doing your grocery shopping? Well, sure, in 6 to 8 weeks. But are you going to be recovered? Well, not fully, no. So
nobody,
it depends upon how you define the recovery.
Right.
Well, Angie in St. Francis has a different question for you, I believe. Hi, Angie. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Okay. My physical therapist had recommended that I use the DynaSplint. So I had a sales consultant come to my place. And the thing is that they stressed I have to keep my heel firmly in there. And it's supposed to stretch my heels so I could walk better in that. However, what I'm noticing, I was told that you're supposed to feel something. I mean, the therapists say that, the sales consultant, she hasn't been on the job very long, only about 6 months and that. She doesn't seem to give all the answers in that, because I've called her and that, and I won't see a therapist for another month. So and the therapist expects that I'm going to have some improvement before I get back to see her. So I was wondering what you could tell me is supposed to, you know, work on the heel on that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is this for your ankle, Angie, or your knee?
Oh, my heel.
Your heel. So the DynaSplint is around your ankle, your foot and ankle?
Oh, yeah. I got three straps on it.
And
I put in it.
Is it trying to make your ankle bend more?
Well, maybe so, but they seem to stress the heel part more, and then it would go up into the back of my leg and that, you know.
Okay. Did you have an injury?
Well, no, as a result of a stroke.
Of a stroke, okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, what I would suggest, Angie, is that you're going to all this trouble to use the DynaSplint, and you're not clear on if you're using it correctly. So if the salesperson has not been able to sufficiently answer your questions, you should call your physical therapist who's familiar with your case and the purpose of using that DynaSplint and explain how you're using it and what you're feeling. And you may need to go in and see that therapist a little earlier to have that checked, because you don't want to go and pay for a DynaSplint for a month and have it not be doing what it's supposed to be doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I was wondering if you had ever heard in any cases, they say that you're supposed to feel something in your heel.
Well, you won't feel it in your heel. You'll typically feel it around your ankle or in the muscles in the back of your calf or behind your heel, but not in your heel itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
you really need to call.
Yeah, yeah. I think you need to get some clarity on that.
So call your physical therapist and... Maybe they can explain over the phone, but it sounds more like you may have to go in.
You may need to get a visit, but it's good that you called, because that's a really important question that you're asking.
Yeah, and Angie, when you go see the physical therapist, make sure you bring that DynaSplint in with you so they can put it on you and you get a chance to feel what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I hope that helped.
Yeah.
Howard in Mondovi. Your turn. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Well, thanks for taking my call. Some many months ago, I think it was back in May, I was walking on the treadmill doing about a 2-minute interval at about 4.3 miles an hour, and I felt a small popping behind my left knee. Well, it's turned out many months later that I have a torn medial meniscus. So I'm wondering what activities, once I have my surgery, I'm having some orthostatic surgery done in a few weeks, What kind of activities either help contribute to that torn medial meniscus? What things should I avoid? I mean, I'm an avid walker, and I'm thinking maybe my walking or my stretching or something may have contributed to that tear.
How old are you, by the way, Howard, or roughly?
65.
Okay.
You know, chances are that your walking didn't really contribute to it. Do you know where in the inside the tear was? Is it in the front or the back?
I believe it was in the back.
Yeah.
I seem to have, when I walk too much now, preoperatively, I sort of get a pain at the top of my calf, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's typically where a meniscus tear hurts. But, you know, chances are it wasn't your walking that did it. You know, when you walk... when you fully straighten your knee, which is when you would put the most pressure on the posterior part of your meniscus, it's you don't have a lot of weight on it. So chances are that the walking you've done has been healthy for your joints and healthy for your meniscus. It was probably just the normal wear and tear of your knee joint as you aged, and that meniscus as you aged. You know, it may have been weakened from something you did years ago. You may have caught it just right, you know, when you were on the treadmill and there was something about the position of your foot, the position of your knee at that point, and you caught something just right and got a little tear. So, I would continue with the walking. You should see a physical therapist who will examine how you walk, how you move, improve your flexibility and your strength, and they can make recommendations for you. But afterwards, some non-weight-bearing activities like bicycling would be good, swimming or other exercise in a pool so that you're only partially weighted would be good, and then working your way back into walking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, Howard, they'll be able to tell you what not to do based on the type of surgery that you have as well. And there are a list of things you need to avoid, especially in the beginning, but even long-term to help protect the meniscus. And that should be all on kind of the discussion list that they go through with you.
Right. And also, you'll want to know what your joint surfaces look like and if you have arthritis, because sometimes you get a meniscus tear because you have arthritis on the adjacent joint surface, and you'll want to know that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've already found out I had no arthritis. My knee looks good except for the tear, and I was just thinking that maybe I stretch my quads by grabbing my ankle or my foot and pulling it back, and I was wondering if that kind of stretching was harmful.
Well, when you have your knee fully flexed, it puts more pressure on the posterior part of the meniscus. I mean, the good news is you're not weight-bearing at the same time. The hardest thing is to be weight-bearing in a full squat, right, because then you're compressing the meniscus in a gravity position. So, you know, if you take that in a non-weight-bearing position and, you know, carefully take hold of it and stretch, you should be okay.
Okay.
Good luck, Howard.
Thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And, Donna in Spooner has a meniscus issue, too, I believe. Donna, hi.
Hi. I think my meniscus tear is on the side or in the front, but I just had the MRI, and then I forgot to ask what I cannot and can do until I see the specialist. Can I still treadmill? Will I make it tear more?
Well, does it hurt to treadmill?
Well, it hurts all the time when I walk. What's the difference, you know, if it's walking around or on the treadmill? At least I get the exercise. Do you think it'll make it worse?
Well, it can stir up your joint. So, you know, that will it make the meniscus tear worse? Probably, you're probably not going to tear it more, but what it'll do is if it's hurting and your joint swells afterwards from all that activity, that's just an unhealthy environment for your knee joint itself. So so if it's swelling, if it's feeling worse after you do that, then you probably shouldn't. If you want to walk, I'd suggest you get in a pool where you're only partial weight bearing, or that you bicycle if you can do that comfortably.
Well,
rather than the treadmill.
But it hurts to bend it.
Well, you don't...
Bicycling would not be...
Okay.
That would hurt it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, sometimes you can adjust the seat so that you don't bend it so far. So, or sometimes people can bend it enough to get around on a bicycle. So then, you know, your other option would be a pool, doing some bicycling in a pool or an activity like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing the physician soon?
Well, I saw the physician, and then he said they will call me. But
okay.
You know, things work a little slow when you're up in the Northwoods.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I guess the only other thing I'd say is, you know, if you can't get in a pool, you can't find any other alternative, you can do some walking, but do it in small doses so you can monitor your symptoms afterwards. So if you're used to walking for 30 minutes, get on and walk for 10, then get off and ice your knee and see how it is. And maybe later you can walk for 10 again, then ice your knee afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds great. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Donna. Thank you for calling. But a Facebook question from Keith, who's wondering how to know when to get help with joint pain. He says, I have low-level knee discomfort in one knee, not a problem with normal activity or working out. It flares up with long, repetitive exercises, things like pain on the medial side and IT band pain. Be sure nice to get it resolved before biking and hiking season. Can low-level knee issues be elevated, or will I just be told to tough it out till it gets worse?
Well, low-level knee issues can get elevated, especially
to a big problem.
Man, that's when they come and see us. So it's better to deal with it when it's a low-level problem than to wait until it's a big, blown-up, ugly problem and the sun is actually out. So it'd be better to deal with it now. One of the questions that comes to my mind is why you have this in one knee and not the other, because typically you do most things with both legs, unless you're in some kind of occupation where you're doing one-legged stuff. So I'd go in, see a physical therapist, get examined, you know, from stem to stern, and see if there's anything about your posture, your movement, your anatomy that's predisposing you to problems on one side. And then they can give you some recommendations about exercise to deal with the specific problem and strategies for returning to biking and hiking so that it either stays a low-level problem or goes away.
Mm-hmm. And possibly arthritis, a little bit of arthritis in that one?
It could be. Yeah. It could be.
Probably
depends
most
upon,
likely.
Yeah, I'm not sure the age.
I don't know
if we got an age on that one.
We didn't get an age, no.
Yeah, so it could be some arthritis.
George in Glendale, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Almost springtime. My wife is in her early 70s. She has plantar fasciitis, but she is getting taken care of for that. But she's and she also wears orthotics. But she's been complaining lately of pain at the ball of her foot. She tries to walk every day in a mall, which is a fairly hard surface, obviously.
Yeah.
And is there some kind of cushioning? I mean, she has the orthotic. It's a soft orthotic. Is there some kind of cushioning that you can recommend, or some kind of therapy or exercises, or even is there some kind of artificial padding that can be injected into that into that area to kind of create a new cushioning? So what's your thoughts on the subject?
Well, the ball of the foot, we call it the metatarsal arch, and they do make metatarsal arch pads that you can get at a drugstore. So that would be the first step. So rather than the orthotic that goes lengthwise, this one goes crosswise. Does she have a full-length orthotic or a three-quarter?
Full length.
Okay. This is something that I think she can just put on the bottom of her foot that would stick to the bottom of her foot, and have her try that to start with. That's the least expensive alternative, and see if that gives her any relief. And if so, then she may want to talk to her podiatrist or whoever prescribed her full-length orthotic and have something built into her orthotics to deal with the metatarsal issue.
Okay. Will this metatarsal arch pad throw off the foot? In other words, it is only on one side, and will it cause her
list to one side or something? Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. It shouldn't, because it shouldn't affect your leg length.
Right.
You know, if it was underneath your heel, it affects your leg length and kind of throws things off. But because of where you're at in the gait cycle, when the metatarsal arch hits the ground, most of your weight is at that point on your other foot. So it shouldn't be a big issue, but it's certainly something to be aware of. So it's good that you're tuned into that and you can watch for it.
Okay, so that's just the idea that her foot won't pronate? Is that the right word? In other words, it puts all her weight on the outside of her foot. In other words, the pad is on the inside of her foot.
No, it doesn't have anything to do really with pronation. What we're doing is just creating padding underneath her metatarsal heads, which is the ball of your foot, because it sounds like she's having pain with the ball of her foot. So
right, that's where it is, right behind the big toe.
Right. Yep. So it could be related to pronation, that she's rolling over and pronating and putting too much weight on her first metatarsal head, in which case a podiatrist would need to tweak her orthotic because she's still over pronating. It could be a cushioning issue underneath her metatarsal heads, which is why we talked about the metatarsal pad. That's a possibility. The third possibility is that if her calf muscles are tight, she could be overpronating over the top of her orthotic in that her orthotic is not functioning properly because her calf muscles are too tight. So maybe she should think about seeing somebody and having her foot reevaluated and her posture and gait and so on to sort out which one of those three alternatives is the right one for her.
Right one, sure. Good luck, George. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in the town of Lisbon, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. What I wanted to find out, and this is the first time any of this has happened to me, I have like a little tightened muscle in the right side of my trapezius, up towards the shoulder area. And then what I found out in November was that I was starting to feel like my the rotator cuff was real achy, and it's getting much better. I had therapy with that. And now with the last 3 weeks, I'm also feeling carpal tunnel in my right hand. Is there any connection with any nerve following from the top all the way down to my hand?
Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, Mary, you couldn't have described it better, actually. The answer is yes. And it does make it challenging because carpal tunnel is relatively common for people who use their hands a lot, repetitively or new activity.
Right.
But it also certainly ties into nerves that exit from your neck. And
yes.
And the upper trapezius, you know, that can be involved secondary to a shoulder or a neck problem, or people can have both. But to answer your question, yes, it is possible it's coming from your neck as opposed to a local wrist problem.
So how does one take care of that?
Well, what I recommend is if you don't have another appointment scheduled with your physical therapist, I'd go back and see them again.
Okay.
And then they can help you sort out, is it a local wrist problem, is it a neck problem, or a little bit of both? So they would examine all those areas. And then there's nerve mobility tests, like a straight leg raise for the leg. There's like a straight leg raise for the arm that can give them information about the status of the nerves. Are they irritated? Are they mobile or not? But that's what I recommend that you see. And they'll be able to sort out which of the areas are involved and give you a good home program related to that.
Okay.
Yeah, they've given me exercises to do, too, for the rotator cuff.
Yep.
But I don't feel any soreness in the neck. It's just where this trapezius, that little bumpy area.
Yeah.
It's a slight bump area, and I don't know if it's a tightened muscle or whatever.
Well, and it could be, again, it could be secondary to the shoulder, or it could be related to your neck in terms of why the upper trapezius becomes involved. And that's where the exam would come into play for you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mary, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our physical therapist, with us today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Looking at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Bill's associate professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have them along, and thank you so much for listening in. Betty in Milwaukee, I know, has been waiting a while. Let's go to her next. Hi, Betty.
Oh, hi. This is so good. Thank you. I'm trying to get ready for hip replacement. I'm usually pretty active. I do water aerobics 3 or 4 times a week. But I thought before I increase my activity, I should check out my shoulder because my shoulder was hurting a little bit. I thought, well, if I want to do the machines, I should. Well, it turns out that the shoulder is worse than the hip.
Oh,
man.
It says here on this paper, it says severe degenerative change involving right glenohumeral joint, whatever that is. What I thought was if I lost 10 pounds and I increased my upper body strength, everything would go really smoothly like the last one did, and I'm used to moving. But apparently I'm not supposed to be moving that shoulder a lot, and I'm wondering what I can do. I don't like not moving around.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're going to continue your water aerobics classes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I would see a physical therapist to get set up on some strengthening exercises for your upper quarter.
Okay. Do I have to do that through my doctor?
You shouldn't have to. It depends upon your insurance.
Ah, okay.
So if it's Medicare, Medicare requires a referral for you to be covered.
Right.
So then would have to come through your doctor.
Good.
So there are different kinds of exercises you can do. There are isometric exercises, which work very well for people who can't move a joint a lot. And Bill talked about those earlier in the show. And those are exercises where you get resistance, but without moving the joint.
Well, my other doctor took that sheet of paper away from me. He said, you better not do this.
Okay. Well,
but maybe...
Were they isometric?
Maybe now that I'm with the orthopedic guy, I don't know if they were or not.
Probably not. They were probably traditional, you know, through the range of motion, strengthening exercises.
We were thinking it was a bursa problem.
Right, and I would agree those are probably not the right exercises. So being seen by somebody who can evaluate your shoulder and try out some of these exercises. So it's not just handing you a piece of paper and saying, okay, we'll go do these, push against a wall or push against your other hand or whatever, because it may be that the positions that are pictured on that paper hurt your shoulder. So they may have to modify a little bit and say, your elbow needs to be here and your hand needs to be here. Now push. Oh, that doesn't hurt. I can do it in this position. So it may take a session or two to sort out what you can do that doesn't make your shoulder worse. But you're absolutely right that getting that upper quarter, and that means your neck, your shoulder, your upper chest and upper back strong, will be very important.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm used to being a strong, healthy person, I don't like not moving.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, Betty, it sounds like you've been through this once before, and you know after the surgery, you're going to use your arms a lot, walking with a walker, getting out of bed. And so you need that shoulder and upper quarter to be as strong as possible. And a therapist can help give you specific exercises for what that shoulder is going to be asked to do after the surgery, you know, until that hip heals more and you become more independent with it. So this is a good time to get started on.
Right. And I think the other interesting thing is you've been doing this stuff all along, your water aerobics and so on, and you've had some shoulder pain, but clearly it's not been debilitating.
Right.
Because you didn't even know that you had arthritis that bad, and you were doing all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Had to back off sometimes, and then it came up with all this stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but get in and be seen and get the right exercises for you so that you're in as good a shape as possible before these surgeries.
Good luck, Betty. Thank you. Appreciate the call. And Bob and Baldwin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and guests. I had plantar fasciitis first in my right foot around 2 years ago. And then after doing some treatments, I'll tell you that in a moment, but I got it in my left foot. I again treated it, and it went away again. And then a German guest and I were traveling for about 3 weeks together, and he had it bad. And so we did some treatments while he was gone, and it's all gone. So what we used is a combination of acupuncture and then taping of the feet, especially in the arch area, put a single tape through there, and then massage with what I used is what's called possum oil, which you can get at a Chinese store, and then having appropriate shoe inserts, I found, and you can make it go away.
It sounds like it was a good combination for you, And the trick is, then what do you do to keep it from coming back again? And that's where, once you get the symptoms under control, that's where having somebody look at your foot and ankle mechanics. Sometimes orthotics are necessary. Sometimes certain muscles being stretched are necessary to keep it from coming back again. But it sounds like that was the right combination for both of you, and hopefully it doesn't come back.
And we had an email from Bliss as well relating to this. There's a... Priceless, Bliss says there's a priceless DVD available through the library to help with plantar fasciitis. It's titled The Heel Pain Rescue Program. It's a DVD, a step-by-step guide to eliminating heel pain caused by plantar fasciitis. It was done by sports medicine physicians and therapists. And I don't know if you guys are familiar. This person said they suffered for 14 months, and after got this DVD and tried it, got him back on the feet.
Yep. I think it's great. I love when there's those resources out in the community for people to try out and become informed on how to manage some of these problems independently. It's not a one size fits all. If there was the perfect mix of interventions that work for everybody, we wouldn't be sitting here answering questions about
That's
it.
Right.
But you know, what works for one person isn't quite the right mix for somebody else, and it has to do with how they move, their mobility, their strength, their usual daily activities, their body weight, all kinds of things. So so finding the right mix for your for each person is important.
And there's really two components. It's recovery when you have it, and then prevention. And yep. And the approach is a little different for both.
Bob, just one more comment on plantar fasciitis. Bob uses the Skechers shape-up shoes. He's eliminated it for him. He's an instructor. He's on his feet 8 hours a day. And he says these Skechers shape-up shoes put the weight on the center of his feet and little weight on his heel. When walking, the heel gets no impact. Well, that sounds good work for him.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's like the taping and orthotics. They all changed the biomechanics of the weight bearing on your feet and how weight is transferred as you walk. So, again, different fixes for different people depending upon what they need.
Ed in Oconomowoc, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've had this chest ache, and it feels like a torn muscle. I've had it for a couple of years, and I'm guessing, fourth or fifth rib down from the collarbone on the left side, and it's pain levels maybe a 2 at the most sometimes, but there's slight swelling, and I just haven't been able to find out what it is or what I can do to make it go away. Hmm.
So, Ed, was there an injury that you can go back to and say this is what started it?
Well, I do the construction work, and I think a lot of the pulling and pushing, or maybe lifting, I don't know, but it's just
Okay, and it's real local. You can put your finger on the spot, or is it a broader area? So it's a local area.
Yeah, and sometimes it feels as if there's slight swelling too, and more sensitivity.
Okay. All right. And this is going to sound like a very obvious question, but and you've had your heart checked out, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I was told that it was probably some kind of a tear.
Right. Okay. All right. Have you seen a physical therapist over the last 2 years for this?
No.
Okay. You know, that's what I would recommend, because at this stage, it's not going to go away by itself, obviously, or would have been gone by now. And if it was a torn muscle, the ribs, there are a number of joints connecting ribs to the sternum or ribs to the spine. And just like people can develop a stiff knee or stiff hip, those joints can get stiff and can cause problems to perpetuate over time. And they'd be able to evaluate your mid-back, upper back, and your rib cage. And there may be some manual therapies, some self-stretching they can show you to help you get over this. And again, within a visit or two, they'd be able to tell you whether they can help you or not.
Be worth it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Good luck, Ed. Thank you for calling. And Art in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I have a heel issue, and I don't really know what plantar fasciitis is, but this seemed to sort of stump my doctor when I mentioned it during my last physical. So in my right heel, right in the middle, on occasion, not very frequent, sometimes 5 or 6 steps, it'll be a really sharp pain and it goes away. And when he looked at the heel, he was surprised because he's been around quite a bit, and he said he had never seen the shape of heel before. Kind of right in the middle of the heel, it's indented quite a bit, as though almost I was wearing shoes with a point in them, but that's not true, and I wear a lot of different shoes. And he said he'd never seen that before. So I just sort of think that the flesh is maybe, deteriorating a little bit. I'm 65 and a half, but any thoughts you've got on this?
Well, the underneath your heel is a fat pad, and that's really what you're talking about in terms of that tissue. So it is unusual that you would have that indentation just in one spot in your heel. It makes you wonder if there was some injury in your past that caused, some pathology there or caused some deterioration of the fat pad in that area. So, that's not an it's not uncommon to have some fat pad deterioration and pain resulting from that. Can also have heel pain due to a nerve irritation because there are sensory nerves in the fat pad also. So if you have an area where that nerve is more exposed and you hit it just right, you can get that kind of sharp lightning-like pain in there. If it's bothering you, I guess what I would recommend is a kind of a heel pad with a donut. where there's a hole cut out in that area where you're missing the padding, so you don't put pressure right on that area when you walk, and the pressure from weight bearing is dispersed in the surrounding healthier tissue.
It's pretty occasional, so
yeah,
it doesn't really drive me crazy or anything, but I was just wondering, and he said he'd never seen a heel that looked like that. It's actually both my heels have that sort of pattern, but I only have symptoms in the right foot.
Anyone else in your family with that pattern? Have you checked?
No.
I want you to check it out. See if it's a hereditary thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yep. All right.
Thanks. Okay, thanks.
Run around asking your siblings.
Can I see your heels,
take
please?
Your shoes off.
Yeah, exactly. Only if you've washed off. Your feet recently.
Oh, man. We have lots and lots of people here with questions, both online and on the phone and even on our Facebook page. And we're going to have an opportunity to deal with many of them. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today, as we talk with them about all these aches and pains and sprains and strains that can develop. And we try to get you ready for spring gardening and other activities, but it's hard to do that with all that snow on
the
ground.
We jinxed everybody.
No, it's still snowing. Still snowing.
We'll be back right after this look at the news. It's great to exercise and be active, but no matter what your age, there are precautions that you should take. Wrong turn or maybe overuse some joints or muscles that can lead to aches and pains or even worse. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network, especially when you're moving from winter into warmer weather and all the activities we enjoy. There's kind of a natural tendency, I think, to jump right in. But we can use this time to get our bodies ready for spring and summer fun. Physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody can help with that. They're here until 12:30 today. Happy to answer your questions when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. Also, be sure to visit our Facebook page. And to find that, go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And if you like that page, while you're there, we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics and links to useful resources. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. As we take a look at sore backs, painful muscles, and all kinds of things like that, and also talk about how to kind of stay in good shape if you're already in shape, and maybe how to get back in shape after an injury. Larry Mueller with Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, our guests. Great to have them listening in. Thank you so much for listening in. Leslie is 57 years old and has a calcium deposit in her shoulder. She could have it removed, but they wouldn't know what the consistency is of it until they get in there. Is there anything she can do to get rid of it without surgery?
Probably not, to actually get rid of the calcium. The question is it the calcium that's causing her trouble, and how much trouble is it causing, and how much better could she expect to be after surgery if she had surgery? You know, some people, you know, have some inflammation. They maybe have some, you know, tendonitis or a bursitis. And sometimes those things are flared by the calcium. Sometimes they occur independently. So if it's really problematic and it's really limiting her function, you know, the first thing would be potentially to have a cortisone injection in the bursa in her shoulder to see how much the calcium is actually contributing to her symptoms. I think that's really the bottom line. Unless you know how much of a contributor it is, you don't know how much better it's going to be after surgery. So that would be a conversation to have with the physician. But if she hasn't had a cortisone injection, if she hasn't had sufficient physical therapy, and that would really be a minimum of 3 months of regular physical therapy to see how much improvement she can expect. She really should do that first before she considers any kind of surgery.
Yeah. Gary in the town of Ween, hello, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Larry. Great show. I'm calling from up north here where it's snowing like crazy, and we just got in for a two-hour ski. It's great, and we love it, and we'll be skiing for a couple of weeks yet. My question was, I've had back problems over the years, and I do a series of yoga and Pilates and other stretches every morning, about 20 minutes worth. And I recently, from the library, as you'd mentioned earlier, found a video called Spinal Stabilization Mat Routines, and the company that did it was Pinnacle. And so I've been doing, incorporating these stretches in with my others, and I was wondering if either of your guests was familiar with Pinnacle or had any knowledge about their programs.
Hmm. Bill?
You know, Gary, I'm not familiar with Pinnacle itself. I am familiar with spine stabilization exercises. And, you know, there are some different approaches where people use different kinds of equipment. There's some mat activities. Some people use a large exercise ball or physio ball. Some people use a foam roller. So there's a variety of equipment you can add to it. But I'm not familiar with this particular program itself. You know, generally, stabilization exercises, they help with strengthening, they help with balance, they help with postural awareness, and that's a good combination for most people, whether you have back problems or not. And so are you having questions about the program? Is it the right thing for you? Is it causing some pain when you do them?
No, actually, I've had off and on back problems over the years, mm-hmm. and so I do this as preventative.
Yep.
And then about 3 weeks ago, I did a little tweak to my back, and I just happened to be at the library, and so I looked in their collection at the Marathon County Library, and they had this, and so I brought it home, and I incorporated that with exercises I've gotten from my doctor, my chiropractor, and my brother, who's a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And I had really good success with it. Like, within a week, I had no discomfort, no tightness, and so I've been doing it. And one of the things, it's all mat routines.
Okay.
And it's, they say it's targeted exercises will strengthen your deep core muscles. And it's worked really well for me. And I was just wondering if, it was a well, received program of stretches or if it's,
Yeah.
Well, I think it sounds like you have a good combination of things between the yoga and the Pilates and the mat activities. And it sounds like you're active. You're skiing. I mean, that is a good combination for a majority of people. And it doesn't look like there's any harm, especially since they're just the mat exercises. And if you've got time to do them, I would keep doing them, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great to me. Good luck, Gary. Thank you very much for calling. And Bevan Livingston, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because there was a few calls back. This lady was talking about intense burning, and it was in her legs and feet, I think it was. And about 6 weeks ago, I sprained my back muscle shoveling. And then I went to a therapist, and they said it was sacroiliac nerve joint. And anyway, so I did two physical therapy sessions. But since that sprain, my right hip has always hurt, but it was tolerable. And I treated it with aspirin or Tylenol and ice. And now this intense burning, it is really getting worse. And that's still all in the right hip and now going down into the upper part of my leg. So I just wonder what doctor you told her to go see for that.
Yeah, I think the person who called before it was in her foot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
As opposed to the back and the hip.
Okay.
Beth, can you clarify the current burning that you're having? Is it the same right hip pain you've had in the past, or is this different?
No, this is different.
Okay. All right. Well, and what you describe, it sounds nerve-related. As Lori mentioned earlier, burning is a pretty common descriptor that people use, and the fact that it's moving into your leg means the nerve is getting more irritated.
Okay.
Do you have any burning, numbness, pins and needles below your knee?
No.
Okay. So that's good.
Yeah, numbness is true, though. When you touch it, it's like skin is dead or something. It's really numb, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Have you seen a physical therapist? So you saw a physical therapist, but
yes.
they're finished with you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Two treatments.
All right. Well, I would potentially get back on their schedule or see a spine physical therapist. It sounds like it's more than just your sacroiliac joint. That joint is in the area. But someone who can do a good neurological screen, including straight leg raise types of stretches and mobility, but also look at your lumbar spine and see if they can figure out, again, where it's coming from. And whatever you were doing, it needs to be changed with the symptoms moving down into your leg. There's specific programs designed to get pain up out of the leg toward the back. And then when it reaches the back, then the program changes a bit.
Okay.
And it sounds like that's what you need.
Okay. Okay.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Beth, for calling. And Bonnie and Sobieski, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I had, now my dog's barking. I had back surgery in 2000 for a cage put in my spine. And last month I went in an MRI and they found two slightly bulging discs. But the surgeon said he will not operate, and he's got me on Neurontin, which I take like three times a day. But I have such tremendous leg pain, especially at night when I lay down. It feels like my leg is getting crushed right from, like, almost from my hip right down to my toe.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then I pretty much have to sleep in a recliner. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to help alleviate that pain.
Yeah, well, have you seen a physical therapist for this?
No.
Recently?
No, he's got me on Neurontin, and he wants to try that for like 3 months. And then if that isn't working, then he would consider doing injections.
Okay. All right. And how long have you been on the Neurontin, Bonnie?
About a month.
Okay. And are you any better at all?
No. Okay. Not at all.
Well, then I would call and get in to see a physical therapist. I wouldn't wait. It doesn't mean the medication won't kick in eventually, but month is a long time, and it sounds like you're miserable. And the therapist, besides evaluating you, can help address the sleeping issue, you know, positions in bed, and you know.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, but if I'm standing at the kitchen sink doing dishes, I can get maybe halfway through, and I have to sit down. I can't stand.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't wait. I'd go in and have me evaluate you, and so they can get you started on a program.
Okay. Sometimes if I get, my boyfriend will stretch me. Is that good or bad? Because it actually sometimes feels good, but I don't want to screw anything up.
No, so is he stretching through, pulling through your legs, or is he like
just picking me up.
Okay. Yeah, so he's giving you a form of traction is what it sounds like. And as long as he lets you down slowly, it's generally a good thing. And that's what, as you were describing before, I don't know if you have access to a pool, but the therapist could maybe, if you can get access to a pool, water might be a really good place for you where you can stretch and strengthen and probably do a lot more than you can in a land-based program. So your question, what your boyfriend's doing sounds just fine for at least temporary relief, but I wouldn't wait any longer to go in and see a physical therapist.
Okay. Well, that's what I needed to know. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have an email from Pat in De Pere who is wondering if there's any treatment other than surgery or steroids for trigger finger. I had one shot, which did nothing. The finger does not hurt, but is on my right hand ring finger and can make picking things up iffy. If surgery is called for, what is the recovery time? And what is trigger finger?
Trigger finger is it's usually an injury to the soft tissue, often a ligament. And then when you bend your finger, the ligament kind of snaps over across the axis of rotation. And then you can't straighten it back out again because the soft tissue is on the wrong side of the axis of rotation, so you have to actively straighten it back out again.
Okay.
You know, there are splints and things that they use for those things. I'm not sure how long it's been going on. You know, the steroids, you know, typically used for pain and inflammation, but it doesn't sound like she's having those. It sounds like it's more of a functional issue. So I'd recommend that she see a certified hand therapist and have her finger evaluated by a certified hand therapist, and they can tell her if there's any specific splints or other assistive tools that would help her with her function, and she can see how challenging the function is and whether or not it'd be worthwhile for surgery. And a certified hand therapist could tell you more about the surgery and recovery and what the expected outcomes are, more so than I don't deal much in hands.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't sound like an injection would be really appropriate at this stage.
No.
Right. No, it sounds more like a function issue.
Yep.
Mary in Greendale, hello.
Good morning. I have a hammer toe on my left foot. It was diagnosed by a podiatrist, and the bone is moving towards the large toe, so it's not going upward, you know, where I'm having problems that way, but it's towards the toe. I've had calluses in there, which have been removed, but it's getting worse, and I do put padding around the toe or between the toes. I previously did have, I have a neuroma in that foot also, and I've had cortisone shots for those, and I did have bunion surgery about 20 years ago. What I'm wondering is if there's any exercise or massage or splint to prevent it from getting worse or improving it, and also I see these ads all the time, and I wonder if the stockings and things that they advertise would help.
Well, typically stockings aren't going to do much for a hammer toe. The splints that you're using tend to be the best things. An orthotic to change your foot mechanics. Sort of the big overarching issue I see here is the change in your mechanics of how you walk and move because of the foot problem that you have. And that will eventually lead to problems farther up in your knee and your hip and in your back. So if you haven't seen a physical therapist to have that whole leg and your posture and movement patterns evaluated, I would do that. It sounds like you're seeing a podiatrist who has recommended some of the things that you're using already, and that I would presume you're still under that person's care.
Yes.
Yeah,
I have had several different types of orthotics.
Right. So I would continue on down that path because that person has seen you and knows your foot, and it sounds like you're getting the right kinds of interventions for the specific problem you have there. But stepping back and looking at the big picture, I would also look at the function of your entire leg to make sure that foot is not impacting how you move. And they might also be able to give you some other suggestions about shoes or things like that would be useful for your foot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Jamie in the town of Delafield. Hi.
Hi, I'm calling for the, I have a question for the therapist.
Yes.
I have a torn meniscus and discoid meniscus, which isn't that a C-shape?
A discoid meniscus is, rather than it being O-shaped, it's usually flat like a disc. It's usually on the outside of your knee.
Okay. And the orthopedic doctors, I'm going to be having surgery on it in June on the tear.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering how long of a recovery it is.
So this is a tear in the discoid meniscus?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty typical. So the meniscus is kind of C-shaped on the inside of your knee and O-shaped on the outside of your knee, but it's circular with opening in the middle. But a discoid meniscus doesn't have that opening. It's flat like a disc, so it's not unusual for that to tear because there's tissue where there typically wouldn't be tissue. So what they would do is go in and trim that out and make that discoid meniscus an O-shaped meniscus like a normal meniscus would be. So you should recover fairly quickly after that. May I ask how old you are?
I'm 32.
Okay. So you're still young, and the point in asking is your joint surface underneath there will be loaded a little bit differently than it was previously because it was used to being covered by a meniscus, and now it will no longer be covered by a meniscus. So you need to be careful going back to anything that's impacting. So you need to kind of think of it as an arthritic knee for a while and take it easy with your weight bearing and do non-weight bearing activities, get in the pool, things like that, until it recovers and you see how it's going to feel with that change in its mechanics.
All right, and then I was wondering, should I get my right leg, my right knee checked out too then to see if it's like that?
You know, if you're symptomatic, no. If you're not symptomatic, because what are you going to do? You're going to go have surgery on something that's not bothering you?
No.
That's asking for trouble. So if you do have one and you tear it down the road, then you'll deal with it then. But in the meantime, if you're doing fine, just leave it alone.
All right. Because I work at a grocery store, so that's why I was calling, because I work at a grocery store.
On your feet.
On your feet. Are you at a cashier? Or?
No, I'm I bag groceries and I push carts in.
Okay. So just make sure you're wearing good shoes that have good shock absorption.
Okay.
And if they're any place where you're doing static standing, you should have a rubber mat that you stand on.
See, I can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah,
so.
That's what I figured. So get.
I wear like a knee brace and stuff right now.
That's fine. But good supportive shoes that have good shock absorption will be important.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. And Mary Ellen in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm looking to have a knee replacement in the future because the doctor told me that I've got bone on bone. But in the meantime, I saw an article in the paper about a new cartilage surgery jiggly material called hydrogel that they open up your knee and cover it with a sticky base and then drill holes in it. And this hydrogel is supposed to encourage your knee to grow its own cartilage. How far down the line is that?
I still think that's a ways down the line for someone who's bone on bone. There are a variety of surgeries that use related techniques to fill smaller defects in the knee. So defects that are not large, that are not on primary weight bearing aspects of the knee, that are in otherwise healthy knees, and so on and so forth. So there are a variety of different techniques that are similar to that. But in terms of this to replace an entire joint surface when you're bone on bone, It's not going to be in your future.
Okay.
There you go.
I try.
You know, it's always good to ask.
And
you can ask your surgeon about it as well and get another opinion.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Mary Ellen, similar to the previous callers, this is a time, if you're not doing it, you know, get that knee in as good a shape as possible, work on hip flexibility, core strengthening, so go into surgery as well prepared as you can.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. And good luck with that surgery.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi. This is a weird problem, but I read a letter to the editor saying, why don't these lazy Madisonians keep their sidewalks free of ice? So I'm really a small person, and I went out and got a crowbar, and in about 2 hours, I got all the ice off my sidewalk, and ever since then, the tips of my fingers have been somewhat red and tingly, and it's really uncomfortable. They're kind of cold, and my balance, I've noticed, has been off. This has never happened before, and I wonder, should I just have my fingers amputated, or what can I do? I don't want to go through the rest of, my time on Earth with these tingly, cold fingers and a kind of weird sense of balance. I wondered if I damaged maybe nerves. Not just in
maybe
my hand.
Maybe frostbite.
Right.
So, Ann, how long ago was this?
Oh, about 3.5 weeks.
Okay. And when did the balance stuff start happening? Immediately or?
Well, yeah, I just feel, I've always been really active, and I feel even walking, I mean, it doesn't really show because I try not to, but okay. I just feel as if I'm kind of going back and, I don't know. The natural tendency is to sway, and it's totally new, and it happened at exactly the same time.
Okay. And have you seen anybody in the last 3.5 weeks for this?
No, I thought it might go away at first.
Yeah. Well, sure. And typically those things change. I would go see your physician for both those reasons, and I would call, make an appointment, and get in there fairly soon, Ann.
Yeah, you don't want to wait.
Yeah.
Don't want to wait. Good luck, Ann. Thank you so much for calling. And oh man, here we are out of time. Bill, Lori, thank you. You will be back on tax day.
Oh, geez.
we might be back on tax.
Yeah. April 15th.
We'll be dealing with head and neck pain, stress related, and maybe some carpal tunnel from all the computer and writing. Yeah. Yes.
They will be back on the 15th of April. Thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.